Assalamu alaikum, herzlich willkommen bei Kurdistan. Heute eine Folge, die nicht in Deutsch sein wird. Ich mache nur die Begrüßung in Deutsch. Denn wir haben heute zwei Gäste, die in den Niederlanden wohnen. Und zwar einmal Rasha und Susanne. Und als meine, ja, Mitmoderatorin oder Mitgastgeberin Seydan Ateş. Thank you very much, all of you, for participating today. It's a great day. Unfortunately, we have to do this via Zoom. One reason for that being Corona, the other one being you live in another country, so it's easier. Yeah, thank you very much. Would you like to introduce yourselves, like what you do and your, yeah, what?
Well, first, thank you for having us.
Sorry.
And yeah, it's
Yeah,
so
thank you.
nice. It's so nice to talk with you again. And yeah, now we have to introduce ourselves. You want to start first?
You are the main.
No, it's okay. Well, my name is Rasha, as you mentioned, and I don't know what you said about me in German, but
You
yeah.
have to introduce yourself
Oh,
if you do.
okay. Yeah, I originally come from the Middle East, from Egypt. And now I'm in the Netherlands, and between Egypt and the Netherlands is a long story. And you?
Yeah, my name is Susanne. I'm 40. I'm original German from GDR, yeah, East Germany, and I moved to the Netherlands in 2002. And since then, I live here, work here, and try to enjoy my life. And now my beautiful wife is here also.
Very much. This is special. We never had a couple or married people on in our show, and it's the first time that we are four people. So I'm very grateful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, to both of you. It was so great to have you in Berlin when we had our opening event on 23 of October. And Russia, you were one of the people who gave us a statement about the EU. And it was great if you repeat or if you give some of the points of your statement also now to our listeners of this podcast, that they have a kind of imagination. What do you think about the issue, what we talked about?
First of all, you invited me to the opening event because I wrote a master's thesis about the mosque and about how the mosque can change how Muslims see gender and sexuality, especially homosexuality. And yeah, to I don't want to get so deep in the thesis, but what I understood or what was my conclusion is that having a mosque like Ibn Rushd Mosque is very important, very, very important in so many ways because it distracts the power relations which are already there in not normal mosque but traditional mosques. So probably that's why it gets attacked all the time because it means that some people will lose their power by the existence of this mosque. I mean Ibn Rushd Mosque. And I accepted to come because I consider the members of the mosque my family as family members to me. And even though I'm not Muslim anymore, I feel like I am part of the mosque and I feel like I'm part of the Muslim community because Muslims are my friends, my parents, my relatives, Yeah, since I'm still Egyptian or having the Egyptian citizenship, so I am ruled by laws based on Islam. So, yeah. So maybe, it was, yeah.
Maybe we should say what kind of opening event we made in October. So I'm sorry I forget that to say. For our audience, because we are so exciting to see each other and have fun to talk to each other. The opening event was about our new project, the new project of Ibn Rushd Goethe Mosque. It's about the LGBT community and Islam. It means we try to do and we start a kind of competence center for the issue of Islam and LGBTQI identities. Maybe I want to say a little bit more about that, and then maybe Susanne can join. Can say her feelings, because you came as the wife of Russia and have seen the community the first time. So your feelings and experience this day would be great to listen. But first, maybe two guys say something about our project, the competence.
Yeah. Yes. The project, I think we've touched that in other podcasts as well, but it is called Anlaufstelle Islam and Diversity. It's the project that we've started almost exactly a year ago, 10 months ago, or maybe in 11 March months ago. Year. Yeah, March last year. And we wanted to have this opening event in March last year as well, but Corona didn't let us. And in October, we had the possibility to finally do that because of the, how do you say that in English? Lockerungen, when the lockdown got, let's say. And then we had the possibility to do this event. And the whole idea of the project is to give LGBT Muslims at home. This podcast is being, the roof of this podcast is that project, Anlaufstelle Islam and Diversity, and the mosque, obviously, being one project, just two branches. And yes, and then we had this event and it was great. We had you and you, both of you. And it was the first time that I, also for me, it was the first time that I saw Russia and Susanne. And to me, it felt like I knew both of you, even though we never met up before. Like,
that's nice.
The day after that event, we had a coffee together. And as you also said, it felt like sitting with family. And I was so thankful that I got to know you.
Likewise.
This is very important what Tugay said, and Russia as well said before, and using this word family. You know, this is how it maybe listens to the audience when we talk so kind of, oh, it's nice to see you, and this is so great to see you again. So how family members used to behave to each other. And that brings me to the point to ask Susanne again, so her feelings, even when she didn't know, have seen us before, and the atmosphere. Maybe this is something what is really needed by the people. Maybe this is what people are looking for, and just have such a place where they can be so calm and feel like family. Susanne.
Yeah, for me, it was like the second time I came. I was with Russia in, when was it? In January?
Yeah, the first time.
When you went there to write your thesis. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the first years of my life, I grew up in the DDR where religion was not really a thing. And I consider myself as an atheist. And I was a little bit skeptical because, mosque and how the people are, and but I also felt the first time and also the second time we were just really welcomed with open arms, no matter what we are, how we look like, what we believe in or not believe in. It's like you were accepted like you are, no matter what. And it was also now the second time in October, and also I both met you for the first time. And it's like, yeah, like you said, like we already knew each other, and you are welcome no matter what you are, how you look like, what you, who you love and what you believe in. So it felt very nice and very welcome. And it's weird that I really miss you all, guys, and of course Berlin.
Actually, the first time when I visited the mosque, we were, yeah, as Susanna said, we were together, and the first person we met was Mo.
Yeah.
And I was like, should I shake hand, like, or not, or what? Because he is doing the imam role in the mosque, and yeah, traditionally you are not like allowed to take the hand of the imam. And I was like, oh, what should I do? How can I? Yeah, and then he hugged us.
Yeah,
and we were like, oh, okay, that's nice. It seems that this place is nice and different. And it was really a nice surprise.
Yeah. You were treated like as if you just belong to them.
Yeah.
This is a feeling I had.
Yeah, you know, he saw us on as human beings, not sex or women or whatever. Yeah,
this is the point. When you tell the story, I reflect my head. The first thing what I had is, oh, okay, Russia is asking questions in connection with sexuality. So your question was yourself, can I give him the hand?
This
is automatically connected to the question.
I didn't get
it. Is it allowed that men and women give each other a hand? This brings us to the issue of sexuality. And so you also were automatically sexualized singing in this situation. It was just a situation where people should say hello to each other. And in this situation, people sexualized this content.
Yeah.
So deeper differentiates at this point. So sexuality might be a very, very big issue in Islam.
Of course.
Why sexuality took so big place, or how you say it, a huge place?
Yeah.
And not much more talking about family or feelings or congregations or feeling like to be a part of a group, whatever. So what we did in the beginning. Yeah. About family. We're talking about coming home. We're talking about feeling the same like other people and be welcomed.
Exactly.
That should be what religions, in my opinion, or faith works for, or congregation or mosque.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think it cuts. The sound, do you hear us? Do you still hear us?
Okay,
that's good.
Yes, I think, so sometimes I think about that, like men and women not being allowed to shake their hands or praying together, like thinking in Orthodox, or not even, in an Orthodox way, people would say, you are not allowed to shake hands, you're not allowed to pray together. Mm. But then as a gay man, always think about the logic behind that, because obviously also Orthodox Muslims say that there is homosexuality and you are just not allowed to live that sexuality. You are supposed to go in a heterosexual marriage and have your children, blah, blah. But then I think about, am I allowed to shake a man's hand in their mind, you know, or are you allowed to shake a woman's hand? Because that doesn't make any sense. I also thought about, okay, women are not allowed to pray with me, but I I don't even think about women at all, but I have to play with men. And theoretically, be more dangerous.
Potential for sexual feelings.
Yeah.
When two guys together with men, and the same with you, you know.
Yeah. It's like a lesbian woman in a gym bathroom or changing room.
Something, yeah.
Paradise. It's a paradise for people with LGBTQI identity. So it's not logical, really. And when we start this Anlaufstelle, Islam and Diversity, so a competence center for LGBT and diversity, when we talk about diversity, so what do you think? I'm sure you will say it's great that we made this project. And looking from Netherlands to Germany, do you think that we will make it in Europe to build a network over the borders here in Europe? And how is the situation now? How you would say? How the situation, besides Corona, for sure. Without Corona, because I mean, we should talk about integration of Islam in Europe, and it's only a German issue. So we have this competence center, and how about looking from Netherlands to us?
Now, I think that it's possible because I know it's more in the west of the country from Holland, yeah, Amsterdam, Rotterdam, and I don't know, these bigger cities, that there are also, I know one organization who also works with refugees and who left their countries because of their homosexuality. And sometimes it's really a fight that they got the asylum because of... out of this reason, that it got accepted that they left their country because they are in danger in their country because of their sexuality. And I think also it's important to also show the Western countries that Islam is not what you always see on TV or in the news, that there's also a modern and progressive, we say progressive, Islam and Muslims who are also accepted. And yeah, I think when you really put energy in this, that you can have a European network, you can build a European network.
And in my opinion, I think, it is doable to build a European network, but it's not easy, of course, because of all the bad forces which target the mosque and which target liberal Muslims or progressive Muslims. I think, of course, we can build a network in Europe, because even because of course I follow the news of the LGBT community in Egypt and the Middle East, in Egypt and the Middle East, with all the dictatorships and all the oppression, they succeeded in making some progress. So at least in Europe, there is freedom of speech. Nobody go to prison for supporting the LGBTQ community. So I think, we can do it.
Russia, as you know, a lot of people comment our podcasts or videos or activities in social media with the words like, you are not Muslims. What you are doing is not Islam. You are separating, and more negative things. Mm-hmm. When you hear things like that, that what we are doing has nothing to do with Islam. So as a woman who had made her own experience with us without be controlled from any people. So you opened the door for you, and you have, you, exactly what we are doing there for a long time. It was not just 10 days. So this is one point. What are you answering people when they say this has nothing to do with Islam?
Because, well, first they say that, or they claim that this doesn't have anything to do with Islam because they want to own Islam. They want to be the owners of Islam. And they don't want anyone else to have a say about Islam. And by this ownership, they control people. It's all about power and control. Because once they lose their power, which they use Islam to make it look nice to people, or to make it look like the real Islam. Once they let anyone else to talk or to say something that doesn't really add up with what they usually say, then they become like, yeah, this is not the real Islam. We have the real Islam, but they don't have the real Islam. And why the real Islam to them rejects homosexuality? It's because of how they think about homosexuality. Because, you know, when people think about homosexuality, they think about a man penetrating another man. They don't think about women, because to them, women don't have any sexuality. They don't, like, yeah, they are just made to be penetrated and that's it. And to them, yeah, we want to keep this image of a man who only penetrates but does not get penetrated. Really, it's I sound crazy, I know, but this is how they think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how they've been thinking for hundreds of years. I wrote an assignment about homoeroticism and homosexuality in a way in the Ottoman Empire. And for many scholars, they thought there are three genders. The first, and it's like a pyramid. The first person on the very top is the man, and he is there to penetrate. And his only role of sexuality is penetrating. And this, on the second step, there are women, and they are supposed to be penetrated and to serve their husband. And on the very bottom, because homoeroticism was, yeah, there was homoeroticism, lots of it in the Ottoman Empire, but at the bottom there were the boys. And the boys were there to be penetrated. They are not supposed to penetrate. And they were supposed to be dominated by the man, not only in a sexual way, but also in a social way, like bringing wine, bringing tea, and just look good next to the older man. And this is a thing that has been there for a few hundred years now. And also, this is the problem in our, like the Ottoman society was known to be super patriarchal, like the patriarchy was like, is still a huge thing in that region. And people should really rethink sexuality and also love and homosexuality, because love and homosexual love is not only about penetration. This is the whole problem. People always penetration. But there's
You see, Susanne, I was asking about people who comment or say about us that we have nothing to do with Islam. So my question was in this direction, why they have this idea that we have nothing to do with our religion, and why they have taken themselves the right to decide if we are good Muslims or bad Muslims, or if we are Muslims. They normally used to say we are not Muslims. So beginning from this question, you see where we ended up. We start with the question, so why they used to say they are not Muslims with Islam, and we end up again with sexuality. So when you listen to us, three of us, you know, coming from the Muslim community and as Muslims and ex-Muslims. So what is that for you? What do you think about this crazy conversation starting from religion and faith coming always to sexuality?
Now, what I think, the first thing is what I think is that sadly you don't only have this in Islam, eh? Also in other religions you have this, that homosexuality is something sick. Then you also have in the society anyway this gender roles, eh? Men and the woman, and then I think it's not even that long ago that also in the Western countries they discovered that also women have a sexual life and they enjoy sex and they are not only there to spread the legs, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but to say to someone you are not a real Christian or Muslim or whatever only because you like the you love the same gender is for me totally ridiculous, because love has nothing to do, and I can say that, with the way you live your religion. What is the point if you go to bed with a man and be a Muslim, or go to bed with a woman or sleep next to a woman and you're Muslim? What does the one thing has to do with the other thing? It don't change your view on your religion.
Yeah, but I also want to add something as an answer to your question, Siran, is that, yeah, they just see that, yeah, this place, there are women and men praying together. Oh, the women pray without wearing hijab or covering their hair. Oh, they accept homosexual in the mosque. Oh. So for them, you are, the mosque is like this ruining their bubble. It's really ruining their bubble. Like, yeah, all the bubble that we lived in and made people live in this,
yeah, this one,
place.
What they are doing or what, yeah, mm-hmm. is like revolutionary.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like 500 years ago, who was the guy with the thesis? You know, things has to get to, needs to be changed. Yeah, I forgot his name. But, oh God. But you know, for them, it's because the way they live their religion, suddenly, oh my God, it could change. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, it seems that they are afraid that something they are no, they know and hold on to maybe could change, and this maybe they are afraid or something.
Yeah. And because they don't have like really any other thing to say than just saying, oh, they are not Muslim, they are not good Muslims, because they don't have something to say to people other than just accusing others of being not Muslims enough or whatever. If they have something to make people really to convince people that what they are doing is the right way, they can say it, but they don't. They don't have anything to say. They just, oh, they are not good, they are not that. They want to destroy Islam. Because I remember when I Googled the mosque because I wanted to know the address, you know, in Google you can see the reviews on the mosque. Mm-hmm. And there was like, I don't know, 1-2 stars and horrible reviews on Google. Mm-hmm. They are kuffar. They are not, and there was no logical discussion. Nothing. Only kuffar. Go to hell. Blah, 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 blah. But only accusation.
And they didn't visit us once. They didn't even write us an email. They are just like, oh, they are bad people. They do the mosque and stuff like that. And I think this is, it doesn't make any sense if they accuse us of not following any rules in Islam, but then they just jump to conclusions without talking to us, and they are not supposed to be judges. They are not. There's no judge in that way besides Allah, if you look at that from a Islamic way. Mm-hmm. So this is also a problem with conservative Muslims, or not only Muslims, but we're talking conservative people in general. They jump to conclusions. They think they are judges. They think they are perfect. And then when they see others, they always say, no, you're not supposed to say that you are a good person. Only God can decide that. And then he is on his steps and says, oh, you are a bad person. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is also what happens in fascist societies. Like mm-hmm. that one leader, and he's dominating everybody. Mm-hmm. And then there are lots and lots of steps, and every person gets dominated by another person, but also dominates the person beneath that. And this is what people try to do. And we don't want them to.
It's not about Islam. It's about, to me, I feel it's, I think it's about power and mm-hmm. control and politics and money and a lot of things, but not Islam.
Thank you so much, Rasha, because this was really the point where I would love to touch again. It was in my mind to ask you when you talked about Egypt and when you talk about Islamic countries, and as you mentioned, there are a lot of homosexual people. The LGBT community is huge in Islamic countries as well, like in everywhere in the world. As we know that we are human everywhere and. Mm-hmm. Feelings and wishes and interests and hopes mm-hmm. everywhere the same. So we are talking about universal rights, about human rights. And mm-hmm. one question at this point is, you talked about power and about money. Mm-hmm. Imagine in Asia, there will be no dictatorship, no mm-hmm. violence against mm-hmm. free minds and free freedom of religion or free speech, anything, you know? People are allowed to do themselves or be mm-hmm. themselves and do what they want. Mm-hmm. What will happen in Egypt?
Many people will lose their jobs. In, really in traditional mosques, in religious institutions, like really a lot of people will lose their jobs. They will get fired, or I don't know, they will not have anything to do in life, because to them it's not only Islam, it's a job. They get money to tell people that women should cover their bodies. Women, they should have sex with their husband, whether they want it or not. Yeah, they get money for that. They get money from the dictatorships for that. So if the dictatorship is not there, they will not get money. So everything will be like, will go down. So.
But what will happen to the other side? You know, now we talked about the people who get money to protect the dictatorship and the power of political Islam, you know, as a system for a state. So everything breaks down, you know, that will break down. And what will happen to the society?
I think it will be more like it will be free, like really free. Many people who committed suicide wouldn't have.
What are the dreams of the people? What do you think, or what is your experience when you talk to your friends, your relatives, whatever, in Egypt? What are the dreams of the people?
In this point, I have to mention that I participated in the Egyptian revolution, the very first one in the 25th of January 2011. And people were shouting equality, a bread, freedom, equality. So this was the slogan of the revolution. So they just want bread, freedom, and equality. And when we say freedom, it's freedom not only for Muslims, but freedom for everybody. And equality doesn't mean equality between two men, but between men and women, and regardless of their sexuality, their ethnicity, their religion, whatever. So I think, yeah, a lot of things will change. Like now I am trying to imagine Egypt without Sharia laws and...
country it will be.
Huh?
What a beautiful country.
It will be, yeah, it will be very beautiful. Sometimes during the parade, I asked Susanna, oh, can you imagine the parade in front of the pyramids? It will be very successful. Yeah. Really? Or in the Nile, like in this...
like in Amsterdam, yeah. The canal fight, fight.
Yeah, like really, it would be nice, you know, because Egypt is a beautiful country. There is the Mediterranean, the Red Sea, Hurghada, Luxor.
Food.
Like it would be really nice if Egypt hosted... parades or something, but yeah, unfortunately,
yeah,
this cannot happen.
It could be so nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And now, after imagine such a situation in Egypt. So, and I ask you, what are the dreams, and what do you think what the people really, really wants to have for their life? Bread, freedom, and equality. Mm-hmm. So, and when you talk to the people in Egypt, the same to other countries, Islamic countries. Mm-hmm. Actually, mm-hmm. I know that from Turkey very well, because I'm from Turkey. And I mm-hmm. talked a lot, you and me and all of us, we talked a lot mm-hmm. to people from other Islamic countries. Mm-hmm. Always the same, bread, freedom, equality. So now when it comes to so-called Western left-wing and feminists, some of them,
yeah.
who try to explain us our religion on one side, and on the other side that universal rights or the human rights, so-called universal, are not for our culture, our religion. Mm-hmm. They try to explain that this is something made by white old man or white for their own culture. So Susanne, you are this white.
Yeah.
Also, why the universal human rights are just for you and not for us? It's not your opinion, I know that. Just so what do you think, Russia? And what do you think, Susanne, when you listen to Russia? When she's explaining the situation, she was inside the revolution.
Yeah, yeah. I have a lot of respect.
And people shout for freedom. So, and then in these days, a lot of so-called left-wing and feminist people come to us here in Germany, in Netherlands, in Europe, and try to tell me that I'm wrong. As Russia is wrong.
Mm.
Freedom is universal.
I don't really understand the question that they want to, they tell you how to live.
No, like the guy who supports that woman, who support Muslim brothers, the other day we saw on M.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like some left-wing people just think, yeah, it's okay if that person supports.
No, I think it's not okay. For me, okay, I grew up, my first years of my life, I grew up in the DDR. and I'm German, and German has the history. And I think because of that, still a lot of German people are more aware of what can happen when you vote for the wrong people. And that they make more difference about what is an opinion. You have the right to say your opinion, and you can have the right to say and believe whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But I see here in Holland that sometimes they are so naive. And there was now on TV an example that someone, the leader from a left party in Holland, and how do you say it in German, in English?
In German, it's okay.
But I know it now only in Dutch.
Dutch in your French.
The Vorsitzender from this party. And the number 9 of this party is a Muslim woman. And she supports the Muslim Brotherhood.
Oh.
And on this show, they ask him about this. And he says, I like her and what she's doing, and who she supports is her own thing.
Well, my God. She would support a radical.
Yeah. This is, in my eyes, this is so naive. How can you give someone a platform who supports, or is maybe also, I don't know if you can be a member as a woman from the Muslim Brotherhood. This is so naive. You have to watch out. And here in Holland, they don't really see that, how dangerous this is.
It's a terrorist group. The Muslim Brothers, it's a terrorist group. It's not,
So. Just imagine being a woman, the same woman, but not Muslim, and she supports radical Christian, radical, just nationalist, Dutch nationalist movement. She wouldn't be allowed to be part of that party, but this is what all of you said, this is the problem in our political system in Europe. We try to be, open-minded. And then people in left and green parties and whatever, they just allow people from the Muslim Brotherhood who do not believe in those freedoms to be part of that. And what they don't understand is that these people are trying to change something, and not for the good. Not for any good for us Muslims, because we are the first ones that are being touched by those politicians, because they achieve changes inside the Muslim community, what's being preached in the mosques and where the money comes from. I mean, the Muslim Brotherhood is funded by Qatar. And Qatar is definitely not a great and friendly country. Also, Turkey's politicians, the AKP, Erdogan, they are not our friends, not the friends of freedom. And I really don't get it. This is so stupid. I could think about it for like 5 days, and I still don't understand it.
Russia, the Muslim Brotherhood started this. So you have much more experience. Your country, unfortunately, much more experience with Muslim Brotherhood. Mm. Nowadays, they are much more active in Europe and in the world, as you maybe better know. So could you just explain for the audience a little bit about the Muslim Brotherhood and the danger is still being there and how they destroyed this very beautiful country, Egypt, and the society. It was a very open-minded society. And I remember, and a lot of people have seen maybe on YouTube this section about your president who was laughing about somebody who says, women to covered and wearing headscarf. And he was laughing about that, the situation.
Yeah. Well, first, if there was one reason the Egyptian revolution, the one in 2011, failed, it's because of the Muslim Brotherhood. It's because of them completely. They are the main reason this revolution was ruined, because people, they made it like people had no choice but to choose between military rule or Muslim Brotherhood rule. So for people, yeah, well, we will take the military. We don't want the Muslim Brothers. So if they were not in the scene during that time, yeah, maybe people would have choose someone else, liberal or something. But because they were there and they stole the rule and they will put a president from the Muslim Brothers, so yeah, people were like, no, we don't want them. We want the military. So yeah, they didn't like, they limited people, and Egyptians didn't have any other choice. So this is
Raja, can we say it happens just because of power and money and violence?
Yeah. And I actually remember in the 80s, there were no many women with headscarves. It was something really like, yeah, new. And then I remember in the 90s and the beginning of the 2000s, suddenly there were programs on TV presented by Muslim Brothers members who were advocating for hijab and covering, and then a new wave of, yeah, weird ideas came. And at that time, in the beginning of the 2000s, I was in high school, and most of the girls with me at school started to wear hijab and started to go to, I don't know, they call it religious circles led by women preachers. And I tried to go to one of these circles just to see to know what they are doing there. And the woman was saying like really toxic stuff, like, you are supposed to be only wives. Your mission in life is to just raise children, and really like things. Oh, what is she saying? And I didn't go the next time. My friend did. And the friend I used to go with her to, or I went with her to this circle. She wanted to wear hijab, but her dad didn't let her do it. Because he was working in cinema and stuff, and he was like, no way you are going to wear that, this is stupid. But you feel like everybody wearing hijab, everyone like, no, I don't look to men, no, I don't touch men's hands. Like suddenly in a few years, something happened to women and men and girls and boys, and like it became really weird. We were not like that. Like a few years before this wave, we were not like that. We were men and women sitting together, having lunch, shaking hands. Like, and suddenly things changed a lot. And now, after that, the Muslim Brothers who showed their real face, all the people, like almost everyone I knew, every girl who I knew who had hijab in the beginning of the 2000s, took it off now after, I don't know, 15 years or more. So, and they were like, yeah, it was wrong. And we lost so many years thinking that we are aura and that men should not see us and stuff. And they felt like they wasted their youth years in thinking like that. So yeah, so they can be really, really toxic. And if you don't agree with them, they would kill you. They did in many occasions. It's not, yeah. But yeah, unfortunately here in Europe, I feel like they don't really see how dangerous they are. And, but maybe because the Muslim Brotherhood here don't show or don't say what they say to people in the Middle East. Like the way they talk here is completely different. I remember when there was elections in Egypt and they were making interviews and things, and they were just, oh, we are for freedom, we are for democracy, we are for this and for that. And then when people protested after Morsi became a president, yeah, they killed people, they beat them, they kidnapped them, they wanted to shut everything down. Yeah, it was crazy. So maybe here they don't really get it because the language plays a very big role. The thing that, for example, Al Jazeera, you know, this TV channel, what they say in their English version is completely different than the thing they publish in their Arabic version. It's crazy. So yeah, maybe that's a reason why people here don't really get how dangerous the Muslim Brotherhood is. Yeah.
Thank you very much. That was, yeah. I was confused. I thought she was going to say no. Uh-huh. Yeah. This is also something that you can see in Turkish websites like ETIP and Turkish news networks. They say something in German, and then you look at the Turkish translation, so-called, yeah. And you are like, wow, this is very different.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
But,
yeah, this is what I want. That's why I look to you. So the same experience. German and the different medias. Yeah, I think we're coming to the end for this time.
Not oh, no. So,
just for the podcast.
Oh, okay, yeah.
maybe for that last question for what we started about the Anlaufstelle Islam and Diversity and what you said, last point about the Egyptians and what happened there in this country. So maybe we can also make some bridges to the Islamic countries where the people, where we can offer those people who have no voice in these countries to give them a voice. This is another idea. And a very important idea of starting this kind of competence center to say we are living here in the luxury of freedom that people shouted for in Tahir place, freedom. And we have bread and freedom here in Europe, and we have also much, much more. It's not perfect, but much more equality here in our countries. And in my opinion, we have the responsibility to be a voice for people who have no voice. So you are also such a voice, Rasha. I really appreciate to meet you once in in Norwegian.
Didn't
tell the people that we didn't meet each other in Netherlands or in Germany. I met you in Oslo.
Yeah.
You moved from Norwegian to your wife.
Yes.
Was Liebe alles machen kann, for what love can do.
Yeah, it can do a lot. But I have a little secret I want to reveal.
Yeah.
Is that when I was on Facebook, I'm not on it anymore. But when I was there, I used to follow a page called Cairo Confessions. On this page, people can just send their confessions, whether they are in love with someone, whether they are having questions about religion, whether they are homosexual. And when I saw a message of someone saying, I'm homosexual and I feel like God doesn't love me and that this is against Islam, but I can't change it. And I sought medical help and all that. And I always targeted these messages. So because I knew that not many people give positive replies. And I used the link of your Ibn Rushd Mosque as an example of Islam being accepted of homosexuality. And I told them, yeah, you can maybe change the preachers or the imams or the scholars you are following, and maybe you guys can, or that person, you can follow another place, another preacher, check another website to know that, yeah, there are other options. There is other things in Islam, not only hate, 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 and not allowed, haram, haram, haram all the time. So yeah, so I used your website so many times. to give people an example of, yeah, there is a mosque, and in this mosque, you as a homosexual can pray. Yeah. And yeah, and I think many people like the idea.
Thank you for that, Rasha. And Tugay, maybe for the end, can tell us a little bit about his experience. We have a lot of followers from Islamic countries and reactions from Egypt and other Arabic countries. And this is what social media makes possible. So sometimes we have to thank for this possibility. Yeah. Sometimes it's bad, but there are also good news about digital connections.
Yeah. So
using this makes it easier for us to build bridges where people have no voice. So you guys are very active in this point on Instagram, and maybe so for the end you can tell the people about your activities.
Many times it's just about, or people just need someone to talk to and someone telling them, no, you are not a bad person. And that's what happens a lot for me on Instagram, that I talk to people I've never met, and they just need somebody to vent something out. Just that a person I've never met before, I don't even see that person's face because it's a fake account, because they want to protect them. And they send me 5 audio messages and a minute each. And they just tell me about their life and what their problem is. And then I talk. Yeah, I mean, they just need somebody to tell them, no, you are not shit. You are a great person and your sexuality doesn't change anything. It's great how you are. And yeah, sometimes I also met people like that. There's a trans person I know, and I met her. And yeah, I mean, this is a very great thing that you just said. Maybe just try to follow other mosques and other imams. Because that will change a lot. And it also changed a lot for me. I was radical in childhood. And then I thought, okay, I have to leave Islam at some point, because I thought, this is no spiritual home for me. And then I thought, something's missing. And then a gay imam came to our mosque, and I listened to him, and he said, it's great and okay to be a gay Muslim. And he didn't just say that, he had proof for that. And yes, that changed a lot. And that's also what we are trying to provide now.
Susanne, Rasha, you have been a voice now, what we talked about. being a voice for people who cannot speak out themselves as well. And thank you so much for this talk.
Yes, thank you very much for the insight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very interesting insight to Egypt, because Egypt is something that's far away for both of us, because okay, it's on the other side of the Mediterranean first, but also Arabic, and we don't know what happens on those Egyptian platforms.
Well, thank you for giving us the opportunity. Yeah. And since you mentioned Egypt, I dream of that day when I can take Susanna and show her my school and my street where I lived and all that. So, yeah.
We will pray for it and hope, as Germans used to say, Susanna, die Hoffnung stirbt zuletzt. Hope is dying last. How you say it in English?
I like
hope never dies. Yes.
Hope
never dies, and we will pray for that and go on with our work. And we hope to have you in some weeks or months again for us. Go on talking what's going on further in your life and in Egypt and in Netherlands. I'm sure we will have more to talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you too.
And then it was broken.
And now he has to end in German for the audience.
Es war mir wie immer ein inneres Blumenpflücken. It was a inner yes. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam. Tschüss.